have some football!
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Here comes Beckett. Down goes Shaw. The ball is out. Arkansas's got it at the 1 foot line.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
You can actually feel Razorback Stadium shaking underneath our feet right now.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Here's the God in football.
Can't wait for the next game, and the years to come, because victory is going to be habitual.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
There was a lot to like about Arkansas's performance, certainly on the offensive side, where Ty Story throws for over 230 yards. Razorbacks roll up over 400 total yards of offense against the defense that, I mean, some people are attacking Alabama's defense as being a little bit subpar, but you know, with all the talent and athleticism they've got there, the fact that Arkansas runs for over 170 yards on the ground, still very impressive. And, you know, the other thing about this, we're starting to get used to the Razorbacks now covering the spread, even though some of these spreads are getting really, really ugly. They did that against Auburn. The Hogs covered against Texas A&M. And there was some suspense on that last drive of the game where the Hogs went down in five plays to get the final score. Cole Kelly with 13 seconds scores from 1 yard out. And, I mean, if you had any money on the ball game, I mean, that was the ball game for you. So, I mean, it's now 3 weeks in a row, Ty Richardson, that this Arkansas team has covered. And as we always say, and I think it even says it in our open, good coaches win, great coaches cover. And although Chad Morris still is in search of his first victory against an FBS program as an Arkansas head coach, I mean, he might have won some people some money here and there these last 3 weeks if they've been bold enough to put any money on Arkansas covering some very, very large spreads.
I think I'm rubbing off on you, Phil Elson, talking about spreads to open in your monologue. I love that. Yeah, it was a backdoor cover for sure, and I'm sure a lot of people who bet on the game were either very happy at the end or very ticked off. You just have to be one or two ways, because when it's so close like that, it'd be different if Alabama was up by 50-something points. The fact is, Vegas nailed it and was off by 1 point. So, and it's just unbelievable how often it seems like that happens, that Vegas is almost exactly on the line. And that's what basically it was on Saturday.
Well, Alabama was right there on the line. You know, for all the talk, and maybe you watch them on television, if you had a chance to see them in the stadium, it really is a thing of beauty to see Tua Tagovailoa and that passing game. But you got the sense, I mean, that there's so many differences between these two teams right now. And at the top of the list, and this isn't the only team that Arkansas has a deficiency against in this one important area, the speed of the Alabama receivers. You know what? You put the combination of the speed that those receivers have and their breakaway ability and the accuracy of Tua's passing game, that's an offense that I'm not sure if we've ever seen anything quite like it before. If we have, I haven't seen anything quite like it, because we forget they're a pretty darn good running team. But right now, all they got to do is throw it. It really was incredible. The first play of scrimmage, Irv Smith goes down the right sideline, 76-yard touchdown pass, and Arkansas didn't even get a hand on him. The Alabama receiver set up a lot of good blocks along the sideline. They'd sealed it off. It looked like Santos Ramirez was the only Razorback who had a chance at getting to Smith, but he either didn't get the right angle or didn't quite have the speed, or he might have pulled up a little bit. And before you even sat down in your seat, before you even looked up at the sky and realized, oh my goodness, there's lightning up here, and where are the ESPN camera operators? Before he even realized what was going on, it was 7-0, and then just 4 minutes later, it is 14-0 on a play that just seems to define everything that is going on for Arkansas and for Alabama. I mean, you talk about Smith and getting that pass on a crossing pattern, takes it right down the middle, bouncing off three or four tackles before somebody's able to knock the ball loose from behind. And then Henry Ruggs is Johnny on the spot. It's very rare that the football bounces the way that it did for Alabama there, but the ball does not bounce Arkansas's way these last couple of years, if you want to put it that way. And it most definitely does bounce in Alabama's way. And I don't know if I'd say that was a microcosm of the team's season, because luck doesn't really have that much to do with Arkansas's 1-5 start and Alabama being undefeated. But it does go to show that one team does seem to get all the breaks and another team does not.
Alabama's just finding new ways to score, Phil. And I talked to you several times about Jerry Jeudy heading into this past game because he was one of the most explosive players in Alabama. And you saw him take that slant route to the house, just outrun his two defenders. It was unbelievable. Santos looked like he was in concrete compared to what Jerry Jeudy was doing on the football field. And that just goes to show you that they have so many weapons everywhere. And Nick Saban was asked by Tom Luginbill at half. He was like, so why aren't you running the ball? And Nick Saban was like, because they're playing us pass. And do rushing touchdowns count less than passing touchdowns? He like sarcastically asked Luginbill that, and he was like, no. All right, then we're going to keep throwing the ball. It's just such a different Alabama team that we're not used to seeing because they have such a versatile quarterback who's a gunslinger back there. We're used to just this slow, methodical pound you, pound you, pound you. And Greg McElroy, who is a former Alabama quarterback and played in that system, mentioned that several times in the broadcast. It's just crazy how much the dynamic of this offense has changed under Mike Locksley and Dan Enos.
It's unlike any Alabama team that we've seen, certainly since Nick Saban's been there. You could probably go throughout the years, and they haven't quite ever had this sort of an attack. I wonder if we've seen this sort of an attack ever. Really, when you're talking about a quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa that has, more touchdown passes than incompletions, or pretty darn close to it. That was the case, I think, before he got into the second half, completing 75% of his passes. And, I mean, doesn't even play in the fourth quarter. I mean, you do wonder, though, with Alabama's, and I don't know if Alabama's defense is bad. I don't think that's the case at all. But once they get towards November, you do wonder about a couple of the defenses. LSU, perhaps, although, of course, they stumbled a bit against Florida. Mississippi State defensively looked pretty good in their victory against Auburn last time. It's a much different story, though. I don't know if anybody right now looks like they can hang with Alabama. And, of course, the only team that people even talk about now, the only undefeated team left in the SEC after Kentucky was dropped and LSU was dropped, is Georgia. And you really are now on a collision course, aren't you? Which is exactly what people expected at the start of this season.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about the Alabama offense, but how about the Arkansas offense, Phil?
This was our best performance. This offense continues to get better. It's the best we've played against the best team we've played.
This is not the best defensive team Alabama has had under Nick Saban. It's not even close, but it's still one of probably the top 10 defenses in college football, and you hung 31 on them. Phil, a little stat for you. That's the most points scored on Alabama since the 2016 national championship game against Clemson. Trent Shaded, Saturday on South, his friend of mine, came up with that. How about that? And Arkansas hung 30 on him with Austin Allen 2 years ago. So you find success, and you think about it. Ty Story has that fumble inside the goal line. That was a crucial meltdown. And there's
it looked like he was on his way to either diving to the one or maybe getting right to the goal line.
Yeah, I mean, there were mental errors in that game where you have to wonder. I know Arkansas, it didn't look like they were going to stop Alabama at all. Arkansas was close to hanging 40-plus on Alabama, and I'm not just saying that. Watch the game. Rewatch the game and look how dominant. I don't know if dominant's the right word. Look how successful they looked on the offensive side of the football. And you got to give some credit to Joe Craddock and Chad Morris for coming in with a game plan. Chad Morris and Craddock talked about how they weren't going to reveal too much, but they felt like they could attack Alabama, and they really did on Saturday.
Well, and yeah, you see Arkansas putting up season highs against FBS teams in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. Ty Story, you know, he was impressed with Ty, even showing a little bit of attitude after he took what might have been a targeting tackle, I forget, from the Alabama player that had hit him, and he came right at him, too. And you're seeing that from Ty Story over these last 4 weeks. You got to say, I mean, Ty looked accurate, was able to get out of the pocket. They only got to him one time, and certainly there was a lot of pressure on him. He's a fun quarterback to watch because, I mean, look, there is pressure on Arkansas's quarterback every single game. There are breakdowns on that offensive line when it comes to pass protection, And there's no doubt about it, Ty Story is slippery inside that pocket. Might have taken a few games for that to take hold, but there was a lot more pressure on him than just the one sack shows. And he's able to show that on the run, he's pretty good. He's creative. He's accurate, taking advantage of some, you know, you really do have to like what the tight ends have done for the Razorbacks. And certainly C.J. O'Grady or Cheyenne O'Grady, I'm forgetting what I'm supposed to call him, and Rakeem Boyd helping out. So there was a lot to like offensively for Arkansas. When you see, you know, the teams that you got coming up, Ole Miss and Tulsa, Vanderbilt, the rest of the month, neither of these teams are really stout defensively. So that's what we were talking about last week. Once you get past Alabama, the rest of the month of October looks like a winnable month. And after the performance on Saturday, certainly on the offensive side, you'd expect a little bit more of an improvement defensively, even though Ole Miss set school records for total yards and put up 70 points against Louisiana Monroe last weekend. They've had a couple of games that have been just, you know, Tecmo Bowl numbers. But Arkansas can score against Ole Miss. You would imagine they can score against Tulsa, and they can score against Vanderbilt. The only question is, can they stop these teams? I think you are looking at a very good shot at three wins over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and Chad Morris addressed the second half of the season after the Alabama loss on Saturday.
They see the improvements that are made and being made in this program. And, you know, we're going to come back in, and we're going to just focus on ourselves, and that's all we can do. I mean, we've played a really tough schedule over the last few weeks. It's no excuse, man, but we're getting better. And these guys see it, and they know that we got an opportunity now to come back in here and hit reset, and let's play a six-game season.
At the end of the day, you start 1-5, Phil. I mean, that's what it boils down to. It's the win column and the loss column.
But that's now, the halfway point. Now you're at a halfway point. Now you can start looking to the next six games.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And the next six games are a lot lighter, and no coach will ever admit, well, this is the easier part of our schedule, blah, 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 unless he's just talking about non-conference opponents. But it's clear that this is the easier part of the schedule. You get Ole Miss in Little Rock, which is a game you've won the past 4 years, and I think it's a very good – and I'll say it up front. I've said it as soon as the season started, regardless of what I thought before the season. I think Arkansas is going to win this game. I think that you can't underestimate the fact that Arkansas has something on Ole Miss, just like Texas A&M has something on Arkansas. So if you get that first SEC win on Saturday, then I think it opens up a little bit, especially the way Ty Story's playing. Yes, he had three turnovers. I think you can credit them and get mad at him for the interception and then the fumble at the goal line. But the one that he got strip sacked, that's not really his fault because it was a bad Ty Clary snap, and he just kind of got muddled by the Alabama defenseman and he lost the ball. But you're seeing improvement, and I know people don't want to talk about moral victories, but you can't sit here and tell me that this team is not getting better. You just can't, Phil.
That's absolutely true. And do you look at the performance by the defense, considering what they were up against, as a little bit of a wash? Because
absolutely.
Against Auburn, against Texas A&M, we all felt like there were baby steps forward, more pressure on the quarterback, very good defense against the run game. But against Alabama, it just feels like all of that goes out the window because on offense, that looks like a mini NFL team right now. And the thought that most of those guys are coming back next year is also, you know, completely scary and a conversation for another time. But I don't know. There were some plays made here and there. Defensively, this did stop Alabama on fourth down. Almost stopped them on the goal line on another fourth down. You know, what are you going to do about a guy like Tua Tagovailoa that just is able to make every single throw that you have to make? So, I mean, when you're talking about progress for the program, I think the progress was specifically on offense. And also, I mean, we was going to say, you know, maybe punt coverage, too, because, well, there wasn't very, very good punting. And the special teams really didn't get that opportunity to show much. So, I mean, really, the steps forward strictly were offensively. And you do face a pretty good offense against Ole Miss this Saturday. So I'm sure Ole Miss is looking to exploit whatever Alabama did too, because the strength of the Rebels is their wide receiving core and quarterback Jordan Tamu, and that seemed to be, you know, the number one strength for Alabama as well. So that pass defense is going to be tested yet again, maybe not quite as badly as they were this last weekend.
Yeah, not to the extent that Alabama has, just because Alabama has more of just overall better team. But if you look at who they have on the field, I mean, A.J. Brown, that is an NFL caliber wide receiver. DK Metcalf, that is an NFL caliber wide receiver. I mean, they are loaded, maybe not to the extent across the field that Alabama is, but I'd say Ole Miss has better wide receivers. You could talk to most SEC people who cover this league, and they would probably say Ole Miss has the best wide receiver group in the league. And so now it's a matter of gaining momentum, even though you lost against Alabama. You have to go back to the film room, and I'm sure Chavis and his staff are going to really dissect what went wrong against Alabama. But again, I think it's kind of like a wash, because you knew Alabama was going to score. No one stopped them to this point, and the only team that I think has the capability to stop them, just because of the atmosphere, is going to be LSU. But I still can't see LSU holding Alabama under 30 points. Can you, Phil?
I don't see anybody holding Alabama under 30 points unless they're an NFL team, because that really is what Alabama looks like compared to the other teams, I think, that they are playing when it comes to offense versus defense. You know, still, I mean, even with what the final score looks like and the fact that the paid attendance was under 50,000. I know that there were storms in the area, lightning.
We're going to get into that, Phil. Trust me.
I know we'll get into that, but it did seem like it was still a very big weekend for recruiting. Of course, you get another four-star commit. I think it came out last night. Dante Walker out of Georgia committing to the Razorbacks, a four-star defensive end. It was a big recruiting weekend. And, you know, you look on Twitter, it wasn't just football recruits. Basketball and baseball recruits were at the game, too. Everybody seemed to be impressed with what they saw, the show that was put on, and how much, you know, fun they had. Even though, I mean, again, under 50,000 paid attendance for the game at Reynolds Razorback Stadium. I understand 11 o'clock start. You're expecting to get blown out. There were dark clouds in the area, so that you had your built-in excuses if you're going to have a poor attended game, and that's what it ended up being. Now, you wouldn't expect that the recruits would be impressed with attendance just like that, but it just seemed like it was, you know, if you erase the final score and you take out the fact that about a third of the stadium or a little more than that was empty, the recruits, the ones that are the lifeblood of the program now, and really one of the things, we're going to talk about the improvement of the team halfway through the season, but the recruiting has still been top-notch from top to bottom, really, over the past 10 months, and certainly these past 2 months, it's really kicked into gear. It did seem like it was a good weekend for the Arkansas football program. You know, nevertheless, that you still gave up 65 points and lose to the number one team in the nation.
Yeah, we'll have Nikki Chavanel on tomorrow, recruiting analyst for Rivals, and she put out yesterday, now 13th in college football. That's where Arkansas stands at this point after Dante Walker's commitment. You still haven't gotten Hudson Henry yet, so that number is going to go up if you manage to steal him. You can get Jalen Catalan. I mean, that would be unbelievable. And think about this, Phil. I put this on our Hit That Line AR Twitter yesterday. If Chad Morris is doing this well in recruiting, make no mistake, Phil. Arkansas has never had this high of a recruiting class ever in the history of the program. And that in terms of rankings. Now, if someone really dissected it, you could maybe say that early, just in the 20th century, you could maybe really dive into that. But he's doing that, and they're 1-5. They are 1-5 right now, and he's got a top 15 recruiting class, and they still haven't gotten Henry. So imagine if Arkansas starts to win football games, and they have successful, if they have double-digit win season, where is the recruiting going to look like if that happens? That's the question I have moving forward.
Can you imagine the wins? When do they come? Do they come this month? Do they come for the rest of the year? Do you have to wait till next season?
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
And it's Joe Adams with a hurdle. Great speed. Adams down the sideline. He's gone. 92 yards for a touchdown.
Just a couple of days after a 65-31 loss for Arkansas against top-ranked Alabama. Big weekend in the SEC, big weekend in Major League Baseball, NFL too, and as we start our Mondays, we always have some reactions to things. So on this Monday, time for a little three up, three down. Strike three. Good morning, good afternoon, good night.
What does three up and three down mean to you, Airman?
End of an inning. Strike three.
We're bad for this weekend, and at the top of my list right here, how about these three teams that are still amongst the undefeated clubs in NCAA football? There are 10 undefeated teams left in college football after Kentucky, LSU, and Oklahoma, both all three, suffered their first losses of the season. So I guess that means that the three teams I'm about to tell you, theoretically, are still in contention to be in the college football playoff. The Colorado Buffaloes beat Arizona State 28-21. Colorado's next two games, they'll be tougher ones and probably the toughest ones left on the schedule for the Buffs, at USC, as he's improved a little bit, and then at number 7, Washington. That'll be the toughest test for the Buffaloes. North Carolina State beat Boston College 28-23. And NC State, well, you can imagine, next week visiting Clemson. So that undefeated record may come to an end. Although you never know with Clemson. There's usually one or two games, one game each year. I think over the last few years where there was a little bit of a stumble, maybe that's the one.
It's called then Clemson. It's called Clemsoning, Phil.
It's called Clemsoning.
Yeah,
or it's, as some people might call it, Clemsoning.
Yeah, don't let Dabo hear you that, because he'll rip you a new one if you say something about that.
Well, I mean, here's the other thing. What's the thing about the P people put in Clemson? Clemson. Have you heard this before? I hear people put a P that's not supposed to be there in Clemson.
Is it Southerners that do that? Clemson.
It's just people that do it. It's the same idea as, you know, those that say Ole Miss is Old Miss. And it is. It's old. It's old. There's no D in Ole Miss. It's old. It's not old. I don't even old. Think they mean it being old.
I've heard a different connotation instead of Miss, but we don't have to get into that.
No, that's for another conversation, probably off the air. All right, who would have thought Cincinnati would be undefeated? There's no team in the AAC.
Luke Fickle, man.
Hey, but there's no team in the AAC that's going to be in the college football playoff, unless you're Central Florida. Cincinnati wins over UCLA, still a winless team. Miami, Ohio, the cradle of coaches. Alabama A&M, not Alabama. Ohio U, don't call us Ohio State, UConn and Tulane, and then Cincinnati's next game is at Temple, Southern Methodist, couple of winnable games, then Navy, and then the toughest teams in the AAC, South Florida and Central Florida. So my three up right now, the top of the list, Colorado, North Carolina State, and Cincinnati somehow remaining undefeated.
All right, go ahead.
I was going to get my first down. You can go.
No. I'm blanking. It's a Monday. You fire away. I'm forgetting the order.
You haven't had enough coffee yet, obviously.
I don't drink coffee.
I know. That's the problem. I think it's time to start. Down, Auburn Tigers offense, four straight games held under 350 yards. They've scored just 18 total offensive touchdowns this year in six games. Got outrushed 349-70 at Mississippi State. And Jared Stidham, still an NFL prospect, but has the fifth worst passer efficiency in the SEC. He's thrown 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, been sacked 13 times. And there's no doubt about it. Right now, the Auburn Tigers are facing a little bit downward, and it's because of their offense at the top of the list. That's my first down.
All right, my first up, and I'm actually going to go in order now since Phil was I'm sorry, Phil. That deserves an apology. But my first up, how about some kickers this week? And let's start with Graham Gano. This is the Carolina Panthers Spanish broadcast of the game-winning field goal.
Le ha sobrado distancia. Le van a servir. Tiene altura. Tiene profundidad. Va a llegar. Va a llegar. ¡Ganó, lo ganó! 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 ¡Señor! ¡Ganó, lo ganó! ¡Ganó, lo ganó! ¡Ya se le voy! ¡A los Panthers! ¡Taca, taca, taca, taca!
He smashed a 63-yarder and hit the back netting to beat the Giants. That kicker, Graham Gano, you talk about a guy with a leg. He had some distance. He probably could have made a 70-yarder that day. Just drilled it right down the pipe. So Graham Gano, that's my first one. And it's not just him. We got to go with now with Dicker the kicker. Your favorite broadcaster with the call on that one.
That's your boy right there. Hey, that's a good moment for a screamy call. Gus Johnson's the right guy for that time. Still not my favorite kicker's name in history. The Pitt Panthers used to have a kicker named Chris Blewett. That's the worst name for a kicker, to be quite honest.
Goodness, yeah. So Cameron Dicker, freshman, gets snapped to by a freshman, holder, freshman. Texas, Tom Herman, they get a W against Oklahoma. What a game that was. That was easily, I would say, the best game of the day. My bad, Bill, I'm not one to complain about officiating that often, and I'm sitting there watching the game with Tommy, who's a high school official, but there was a blatant mishold call on Sosa Game, and it wasn't just him. I'm blanking on him. It wasn't Briston Gittery because he's injured, but there was an Arkansas defensive lineman that was getting hands up into his face, Max. So there was two, and don't get me wrong, Alabama was scoring at will. Like, this play probably wouldn't have impacted the game that much. But if you're the umpire, if you're the ref, and you're watching, like, there, it was blatant, like, just blatant on that one to a touchdown that's about 50 yards to Jerry Jeudy. You got to throw the flag there. There's only six penalties during the game. They're really letting him play. And it's, again, I'll say it once, I'll say it again. I don't often criticize officiating because I think, for the most part, refs do a pretty good job. That hold, I said, Tommy, look, he's holding him. And then we watched the replay again, and Tommy's like, yeah, that's a hold. And it was just bad. Again, that probably wouldn't have impacted the game that much, but I don't know how you can miss that as an SEC official.
Don't they tell us that holding occurs on nearly every single play in a game of football? It's just a matter of where it occurs or if the official can see it. Hey, every single person watching the telecast, and I think most people at the game, could see that Sosa was being held in a very uncomfortable manner when arms are fully extended across his neck.
Yes.
I mean, it looked like something right out of the WWE, or it looked like something that happened to Conor McGregor this past weekend.
Oh my gosh. I hope that's on your list. I don't have any audio. I probably should have pulled something for that, but that's the craziest thing I've ever seen in UFC. Holy cow.
Hey, look, when Mike Tyson says that's the craziest thing he's ever seen in a fight, Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear, for crying out loud. If there's anything crazier than that, maybe it's what happened at the UFC bouts this last weekend. I don't have that on my list, but I'll tell you, I'm not a UFC fan. This is the sort of thing that gets you interested in it, at least for a day.
Yeah, Dana White, you think about, we need to come out and suspend him, blah, blah, blah. That, he could not have asked for anything. Now people are going to be talking about it for the next week. No way. Conor McGregor throws a chair through a bus window and fights about 6 months later. There is no suspension. There is nothing. That's, you know, the phrase, bad publicity is good publicity. Well, I think that's going to be evident with this moving forward, because they're going to rematch McGregor and his Khabib. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Khabib. I mean, they're going to make so much money. I heard Reggie Miller talking with Dan Patrick earlier today, how he was making illustrations to Malice in the Palace when Ron Artest.
Oh, yeah.
When Steven Jackson were going up and just beating up some Pistons fans who threw a water cup at him. And he made a good point. You should never go out of the field of play. And in this scenario, it was not the octagon. It was the what's that called? Is it the octagon?
It is. It's okay. An octagon.
It is
eight
the
sides.
Octagon. And then in terms of NBA, the basketball court. And you should never venture into the visitor seating area. Not only, I mean, Khabib was going after McGregor's kickboxer, trainer, or whatever, because he spoke illy about his religion. So I can understand him being ill-willed towards him, but you can't do that, Phil.
And there was the fight that was actually sanctioned, and then there was the fight that was unsanctioned, which probably is the reason all the headlines were there. All right, my second up, by the way, Robert from Fort Smith, hold on with us. We'll get through this three up, three down, then we'll get to you on the phone lines. Second up, the Arkansas running game moving forward when you look at who's on the schedule these next 3 weeks and the fact that Rakeem Boyd now has totaled over 300 yards of offense over the last 3 weeks. And wonder if Devon Whaley is able to return from the concussion. Hopefully this week he can, because Ole Miss is allowing 195 yards on the ground per average this year. Tulsa allowing over 200 yards on the ground per game. And Vanderbilt is allowing 165 yards per game rushing. So I think moving forward, the Arkansas running game will be an up, and it's my second up today. Second down is straight up pass defense by Arkansas. And there have been some games that the pass defense has looked serviceable. I think against Texas A&M, that'd be one area, but not against Tua and not against that those great receivers, and certainly not against Irv Smith Jr., who looks like a tight end and a power forward all at the same time. Those first two pass plays going for touchdowns, and one of them the Hogs couldn't even get a finger on Smith. The second one, they got a few fingers on Smith, but just could not get him down. The pass defense by Arkansas on Saturday most definitely is a down, and it's my second down on the list.
All right, so my second up on the list, how about Chad Morris's play calling? You look at what Ty Story did against Alabama, three touchdowns. I know he had the three turnovers, but they looked pretty good from an offensive standpoint. Him and Joe Craddock had a pretty solid game plan. As I mentioned, the second highest scoring that Alabama's given up, 31 points, since the 2016 national championship game against Clemson, and that's Deshaun Watson, who put up 37 on that Alabama team. So if you're in a category with Clemson, that's not bad to be in. So I really got to give credit to Chad Morrison and Joe Craddock for just their overall game plan, because it was pretty solid. If not for a few turnovers, they might have scored a couple more points. So that is my second up on the day. My second down, Jason Garrett last night in Sunday Night Football. I am not a Cowboys fan, but in overtime, they refused to go for a 4th-and-1 inside their own 50, or excuse me, inside Houston's own 50. When Sean McVay and the LA Rams, I don't know if you've seen this this picture side by side on Twitter, were there inside their own 50, and the Rams went for it, ended up winning their game. But Jason Garrett, you got to go for it. You have one of the highest, if not the highest, offensive line payrolls in the NFL. You have Ezekiel Elliott, who you spent an early draft pick on, who's one of the best running backs in the game. You got to trust your players to get a yard or two. You just do. And Dak Prescott, I think he makes decisions if you let him audible at the line of scrimmage, whatever he does. But that was a soft play call. He saw Houston come down to Deshaun Watson, lead that behind a really long DeAndre Hopkins catch and run, and they end up winning the game. But as a Cowboys fan this morning, you ought to be ticked off, and you got to be mad, because Jason Garrett, and typically from watching him, I think he's sometimes aggressive, but he was very soft last night. That was a very soft play call, and it led to the loss. I did not like what I saw from Jason Garrett last night.
Let's go with my third up. It's Scooter Harris, Arkansas linebacker. He leads the SEC in solo tackles per game. Had 5 solo tackles against Alabama. Happens to be what he averages at 5 solo tackles per game. Seems pretty interesting there, because we've talked about Scooter and Dre Greenlaw as well as they have played. And those linebackers, it's been probably that and the defensive line, the number one strength. But with Harris leading the SEC in solo tackles, I found that a little surprising. But then, I mean, he and Dre are all over the field when they're out there. 5 solos per game for Scooter, number one in the SEC. Second down, David Price, left-hand pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. You know, that Boston signed him, knowing full well that he had a very poor postseason record when he was a member of the Tampa Bay Rays and with the Detroit Tigers and also with the Toronto Blue Jays. Did not pitch very well in the postseason with any of those teams. And it's happened again with Boston now in 3 straight years. Though he was good in the one game he appeared in 2017 of the division series, 6 2/3 scoreless. He did not make it out of the second inning on Saturday against the New York Yankees in game 2 of that division series. He lasted just an inning and 2/3. You could see from the start, did not have command of his fastball and walked a couple of the batters, gave up a couple of the home runs, 3 runs in those 1 2/3 innings as New York went on for the win. David Price is a very good regular season pitcher. I mean, he's a Cy Young Award winner. 143 wins, 66% win percentage, and a career regular season ERA of 3.25. I mean, some of those are incredible numbers for Price, who's been really very good in the regular season just about every year he's been out there. And in the postseason, he stinks. He absolutely stinks, and you just can't quite put your finger on it. He's 2-9 career postseason with a 5.28 career postseason ERA. So he's allowing about three more earned runs per nine innings in the playoffs than he's done in the regular season. And some people have talked about Clayton Kershaw struggling in the postseason. He hasn't struggled anything quite like David Price, who is one of, I'd say if you were to take his regular season numbers against his postseason numbers, it's one of the more shocking discrepancies in the last 20 or 30 years. So I'd put David Price as my third down.
My third up is Nick Saban's drive.
I don't think that we really beat the other team when you give up 31 points like we did today, at least from a defensive perspective, and I think that's something we definitely need to improve on in the future.
I don't know. You only see this from a few people throughout history, especially in sports. Nick Saban's one of them. Michael Jordan's one of them. Just the insane drive that some people have, and I wish I had it. And I wish I could aspire to be that one, because Tommy made a good point the other day on the Morning Rush. Nick Saban has more fun going to work than he does having off days or an off season or vacation on the lake. He's
is it fun? I mean, is that the right word?
He enjoys doing what he does. I mean, he can do it another 10 years. I wouldn't be surprised at that. He is just so dedicated to his craft, which I admire. I put in a decent amount of effort, but nowhere near the amount of effort that Nick Saban does towards coaching. And I mean, they just crushed Arkansas by 34 points. Arkansas could not stop them in any form or fashion on the defensive side of the football. And yet he's acting like they lost the game. And he probably railed his team in the locker room after, especially the defensive side of the football. He's like, do you think that's good? They gave up a late special teams run to Davion Warren at the end of that game. He had 78 yards, I think, on that kickoff return. So just the dedication it goes into to his work is just that's an up for me. My third down, the Arkansas student section was pathetic on Saturday. I put that on Twitter.
You came at them on Twitter, didn't you?
100%. Absolutely. You're playing the number one team in the country. You're hosting all these recruits who are going to be eventual classmates, who you're wanting to get on campus so you can have a better football team, and you can't fill the student section? I think a lot of overall fans outside of the student section stayed for the entirety of that game, which I think a lot of recruits saw and liked. Now, that whole stadium should have been more filled than it actually was. But I'm just harping on the student section because that was just gross. Like, you cannot have that many empty seats against the number one team in college football. You know how many times Tua Tagovailoa is going to come in to that stadium? It's probably the last time you'll ever see him. And that's one of the best quarterbacks you'll ever see in college football history. And I realize, hey, it's an 11 a.m. game. Like, I understand that. And I realize, hey, this football team's not that good. I went to 4 years, 3-9, 7-6, 8-5, 4-8. Not 4-8, 7-6. 4-8 was last year. So I know what it's like to go to college with a bad football team. You got to get up for the game. You got to go to the game. That is just an... I'm gonna lose my mind here.
You're upset. I'm very upset right now. You're about to jump through the window.
John's probably the same way. John led the student section for many years, especially with football and basketball games. You got to go to the game. That reflects on not only you, it reflects on the football team themselves. It reflects on the players. So recruits are seeing this, and yes, they got Dante Walker, committed. You got to go to the game, students. That was bad. That's my third, and that's far and away. The third worst down of the weekend.
You know, and I'll have to give some credit to the best answer, which was coming from Justice Mack. He's at CCI Mack on Twitter. He says, we got midterms this week, bruh.
Grades don't matter, Phil. You and I both know that.
Obviously. I mean, they didn't matter to John. That's why he went to all the games and took him however long to not graduate, right?
Absolutely. 7.5 years. So, I mean...
At least you did. At least you got the sheepskin, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's about... Here, look, it's not about the grades you make, Phil. It's about the hands you shake. And I shook your hand a couple weeks ago, and I've been solid ever since. So take that with a grain of salt.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.